Hey, soccer friends. I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us.
Family-owned soccer innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I have Coach Ed, the head of the Texas Spurs. Now, this is a club in the east side of town in Allen McKinney area. And if you're looking for a team, you might want to check them out. I'm not going to say too much, but Coach Ed gave a lot of information. This is a two-part series, so let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I'm Ed Puskarich. I'm the director of coaching for the Texas Spurs football club here based here in the Allen McKinney Plano area.
Awesome. So you've had a lengthy coaching career. We had a little pre-chat before this. So when did you start playing and when did you start coaching?
So I'm native Texan, born in Dallas, actually, back in 62. So I'm a 62er. And although my family's from Pittsburgh, I went to high school in Pittsburgh, but I grew up in the Dallas area and had the luxury of playing soccer. I started at age 5 out in St. Pius X Catholic School, so I'm a good Catholic boy, out in Cassiview in East Dallas, and played basically night and day. My father was a big baseball guy, didn't know much about soccer, as most parents didn't know back then, and just learned as we went along. So I played high school and up in Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania. And then I had the chance to come back to SMU and play soccer for Coach Jim Benedict. Rest his soul, he was a great man. I thought SMU was a really good place for me to try and play pro ball. I told my father when I was a young boy I was going to play pro soccer. That was my goal all throughout my entire youth. And came back to SMU. I got hurt on a motorcycle night before tryouts, didn't work out the very best. Ended up playing football at SMU with the Pony Express, with Dickerson and James, and played spring ball with soccer. And then I had a chance to turn pro in Houston in 1984 with the Houston Dynamo of the USISL. Went to a tryout with 350 kids. First thing we did was a Cooper test, 2 miles in 12 minutes. If you couldn't finish in 12 minutes, you didn't even have a chance to touch a soccer ball. So I was pretty fit and fast back then. ended up playing a 19-year pro career and all over the country. I was on the national team in the 1994 World Cup, one of the last cuts. Didn't make the final roster. It was a great experience. Enjoyed a minute of that. And I finished. I actually had a chance to play in MLS with Dallas Burn, who are now FC Dallas, in 1996, which was a highlight of my career. Tore up my knee in the last game of that season. I played a couple more years with PDL and then retired in 2003. I coached all along. When I played, I started coaching as a senior in high school. Here's a funny story for you, Ian. I had a bad stuttering problem when I was a kid. Mel Tillis type stutter. I used to talk like this. And as you can imagine, kids are brutal with other kids sometimes. And combine that with a pretty nasty southern accent. When I went to high school, I didn't speak for a couple of years. So I was a real quiet kid. And my mother asked me to help out with this little girls team. But when I was a senior in high school, I started coaching. And so I started coaching these girls, and I was stuttering. This one little girl looked up to me and she goes, "Why do you talk like that?" And just as kids would be, it just calmed me down a little bit. I got some confidence and helped with my stuttering problem. So coaching helped me communicate a lot better. And I enjoyed it, and I felt I was good at it. So all through college, I coached at SMU. And when I turned pro in 84, I did camps and coached locally with high schools and colleges. And it's just something that I was always been accustomed to. So
that's awesome. So how did you start off with the Texas Spurs?
So in 99, I was coaching for the Dallas Burn. After my playing days were almost done, I was assistant coach for the Dallas Burn. I met a guy named Pete Harris who ran a club called the Tottenham Hotspurs based in Allen. And I'm a Liverpool guy. So first thing I said, I can't coach Tottenham Hotspurs. We met at a Texaco gas station on Central Express Road. I'll never forget it. And great man, had some good ideas. Felt I could help him with what he was trying to do. And so I became director of coaching, changed the name to Texas Spurs. And it's been a great run. So we're really good family first organization. I say that very proudly. We're what I call a second tier club. You got your bigger clubs that have the ECNLs and the MLS Next teams, and that's all good for them. But we're second tier club. I deal a lot with personal approach, personal attention. We got about 25 teams in our organization, boys and girls. We start as young as 2017s, which are six-year-olds. We go all the way up, and we actually have semi-pro teams with the men UPSL Premier Division One and our women UPSL Premier team. So I like to have a pyramid type thing so the young kids can filter up and watch the older men and women play. And we want kids to go through high school and college and come back and play for us and have kids get married and have their kids come into clubs. Matter of fact, my administrator, Shelby Weaver, who's a phenomenal individual, she played for me in Chicago at North Central College in 1993, I believe. And now her son plays in my club. So she's our administrator. It's a big family affair. So we really like that.
That's awesome to hear. So starting at six, so actually I'm going to start with the younger kids. So what is the philosophy you all have with the younger players? I'll give you an age range from U11 and younger, U12 and younger, and we'll start there. So what's the philosophy of the club playing with those kids,
working
with
those players? I've got some strong feelings about that. I think some of us, and I'm also a father first, and I'll start just by saying my son and my daughter both are serious soccer players. My daughter played all 4 years at Oklahoma City University. She played from U11 to U19 in select soccer, all conference in college, 3 to 4 years national tournament, just a great soccer player, good experience. My son played also competitive soccer. He turned pro, went to SMU for a couple of years, turned pro, played in Denmark and Spain. I know the odds and ends about parenting when it comes to soccer. And I, too, as a professional player, was that overbearing father at times when you want your kid to win the Heisman Trophy and be the starter and stuff like that. So we've all evolved and matured, hopefully. And I think it's essential at the younger ages, U6, U7, U8, U9, they should play someplace close to home. I don't think parents should be driving from Louisville to Allen or from Plano to Midlothian. I think you need to stay close to home. The kids got to have some fun, play with their friends, their classmates, friends, get touches, get with a good coach, a good club. I don't think a dad coach is a bad thing if that dad has some kind of college experience, something like that. But there's a lot of good coaches and clubs in the Metroplex that can give a really good experience with young kids. And I think a couple of days a week is fine. The kids want to go out and play in the playground with their friends is also good. We at the Spurs offer two practices a week. And then Fridays, we have our skills, speed, and shooting finishing sessions where they want to get extra work they can. And then if those kids that live locally and close by and parents have the time, we offer kids at our club a chance to train multiple teams. So if your son or daughter has the flexibility, parents have the flexibility to get the practice, they could be out there 5 days a week. If they don't, and both parents work and they've got multiple sports and multiple siblings, you know, twice a week is sufficient. An hour and 15 minutes to an hour and a half is plenty. So the kids, our test is if little Tommy and Susie are telling mom and dad, hey, can I get to practice early? As opposed to mom dragging Tommy and Susie, come on, we got practice today. I don't want to go. So it needs to be really enjoyable at the younger ages. And I can't emphasize that enough.
So with the younger ages, do you guys spend more time on body movement or time with the ball and touches, or is it broken down based on the crowd that you have? Because I know that at that age, from U11 and younger, it is a kids that love the game, that eat, live, and breathe it when they're especially older, to younger kids that are the same. Then you have kids that are just going because parents require them to do an activity, especially at 5 and 6, or that's what they want.
Yeah, that's a great question. And you want to have like kids together. You're going to have those two or three kids who are advanced, and maybe even at 8, 6, or 7. Or, you know what, have them train with the 7 and 8-year-olds if they want to. But it's all about getting touches. We incorporate playground games, red light, green light. Just add a ball to it. Duck, duck, goose, add a ball to it. You got an instant dribbling drill and control the ball and stuff like that. You want to make sure the kids develop proper technique. I'd say our average practice sessions start with, at that younger age, is 80% of technical. Don't focus so much on whether their elbows are in when they run. And just let them have some fun, relax a little bit. Mom and dads should be away from Tommy and Susie. Sit in the stands. Let them be by themselves. You're not in the classroom when the kids are getting asked to do the alphabet. Let the coaches do what they have to do, because they'll benefit more from it as well, too. And then at home, we encourage that mom and dad, hey, Tommy, what'd you learn today? Oh, you learned a switch. Oh, a pretzel. Oh, show me that. So we got some fun phrases and fun names. We don't want to call the Diego Maradona. Who? Okay. It just simplify is the best thing I can say. Simplify and have fun at the early ages. And if they're good enough and you have the time, then we'll get them the next age group up so they can really get a little more challenged. But being challenged on a daily basis isn't always a good thing. You want to have some confidence. You want to have those positives in practice. You want to have that player master a move and score a goal and celebrate the activity. And lots of positive reinforcement. So there should be very little punishment. Accountability, yes. Punishment, no. It should be all with some fun stuff.
That is... You touched on something, punishment. Most coaches will be like, okay, if you lose, this is the consequence. And it's they're very upset and frustrated. That's even an idea, because once you enter in something negative, they automatically associate the child psychology comes into place. And this is where I have learned as a parent, if your team loses, now you have to go run sprints. Yeah. And then you play again and they lose again because they're all gassed and winded and they're talking 6 and 7-year-olds.
Yeah.
They won't want to come back to training.
Yeah, no, we actually had a session last night. One of my young coaches punished their players and make him run a lap. I'm like, no, we can't do that. We can't do that. First of all, there should be nothing done without a soccer ball. Even jogging around to get warmed up, add a soccer ball to it. And punishment, accountability and punishment are two different things. Okay?
Right.
If a young player is acting up, okay, you have to have accountable. You can't have Tommy punch Susie. You know, no, we can't do that here. We have to be, you know, respectful and stuff like that. Our society and our country is a winning society. We base our results, our successes on our results and failures. And the older ages, if you don't win enough games, you have players that leave you. You don't have a team to coach. So it's a fine balance. But again, at the early ages, who cares if you win? Tommy could care less if you scored a goal or six goals. He has that juice box at the end of practice. But right. Where are we going to proms afterwards? We're going Yummy-licious. And where are we going for lunch today? Can Tommy and Timmy, can he come over and play the game with me today at home and stuff like that? So the kids don't care. Mom and dad are the ones that are pressing the envelope. So that's why the parent education is so important as well, too. And we want to tell the parents, hey, it's okay. It's a lot of clubs use the word development. A lot of clubs do a really good job at it. But that's a difficult word. Development encompasses so many things. And it should be included development with patience, because you have to let everybody develop at their own age. I have some parents say, well, my son's a goal scorer. Maybe, but he's too young to pigeonhole him in one position. Maybe your son's a good outside back. Maybe I'm priding myself of a great right winger. So that's why we teach the total soccer concept. Let the kids play all positions. Teach them how to. A good example is a lot of kids play Pac-Man ball. Goes to the ball. What we do, we put two goals on each side. So they can go to the goal on the right. If it's crowded, they go to the goal on the left. So it causes them to now spread out a little bit. So two goals you defend, two goals you attack. So it's just simple, common things. And again, it's simplicity. It's fun. It's patience. It's just relax.
That's key. I think you touched on a few things and we're going to go over it right now. It's the big thing that you talked about. Our society is all about winning. And I was recently introduced to the FA model of training, and then come to find out USSFA, whatever it's called, US Soccer Federation model, and the coaching license, it talks about it. It starts on the D license and the three phases of training. And that is training to train from U11 and under. Then you probably know exactly where I'm going with this. All this, it's U12 to U15. It's training to develop. Then U16 plus is training to win. And that's what matters. And I was given really cool stats. At the age of U14, 86% of all sessions in Europe, I'll make this very clear, this is where this stat came from, was the EPL, English Premier League. It is 86% of all training matches are non-competitive.
Yeah.
It just blew my mind. So when you're thinking about it, out of 50 matches, 7 are only competitive. 7 only have a score.
Isn't that crazy?
And could you imagine here in the United States if that's how it was? I know that some clubs are starting that are much larger. Clubs will have their own leagues so they can have kids all the same ages and trying to mimic the grassroots model over in Europe. And where scoring is not really mattering, it's how they're playing in those games and giving them structure to play in versus just going out and winning. Do you guys have expectations of coaches at these younger ages for performance? Because I know that a lot of coaches struggle losing, and it's not because if they lose, it's because they lose players and families.
Yeah.
And this goes back to the parent education side. As a parent, I know that I'm happy with a 50-50 record. 50% I'm happy with. Even if it's 40-60, 60-40, I'm happy. I don't expect them in league play. If we go sign up for a tournament, and this is where someone lectured me recently, it was like, if you're going to a tournament, you shouldn't expect to win it. You should have objectives in that tournament. And he goes, yes, you have the pay-to-play model here in the United States, but the coach should be very clear on what their objectives are with your team. And do you guys go into that mentality, or your club have that mentality at these younger ages and set the expectations to be realistic for these parents, saying, look, this is what we're coming in for, and this is what you should really expect. Winning's not the end-all, be-all. Or do you have a different conversation when trying to help educate parents, especially at the younger ages?
Yeah, I don't care what the age is. To me, winning is a byproduct. The one thing I disagree with the terminology is they say teach to win. I think you teach to be successful. I'm not a believer in giving participation awards out. I think that should be earned. I don't think you're not going to get a bonus in your profession just because you're part of the profession. You're going to get a bonus for doing well in your job. None of my coaches are under any pressure to win and be successful in terms of results. They're under pressure to be organized. They're under pressure to be teaching the game properly. We don't allow language in our club. I don't even allow the word freaking. It's the same thing as the F-bomb, and I don't allow that as well, too, from players, parents, or coaches. I don't like red cards, even when a referee is subpar. And those who know me know I'm very demanding as a coach, but I'm not demeaning. And I think there's a fine line with that. And as much as I want to win, it guts me when I see a coach that sacrifices a player playing time to win a game. So if I, as a coach, chose 16 players on my roster, the onus is on me to make sure that 16th player is quality enough to earn some playing time. Now, obviously, if a player is struggling, making the same mistakes, he has some discipline problems, that's a whole different ball of wax. But if everybody's equal in terms of commitment and attendance and this, that, and the other, everybody should play. Is it a 50% rule? Absolutely not. Okay, you got to have some skin in the game. You have to earn the right to play. But you have to – how do you measure winning? How do you measure success? It's just not in the standings. And I'm passionate about that. I have a U19 boys team that plays in the Class League Division I. And we are a very good team, very competitive. But if you don't make practices, you're not playing this weekend. And even though we're having a great game, there may have consequences, college coaches attending, stuff like that. Guess what? You missed your practices this week. And there's no communication. There is no excuse given. And you didn't make it up at any other team's practices. So you're not going to start the game. You probably don't play much the first half at all. And you make it some in the second half. Depends on how I feel and how well you support your teammates on the bench. So to me, that's accountability. That's teaching to be – that's coaching to be successful. That's not coaching to win. If I want to win the game, I'll put my best player in whether he came to practice or not. And I think that – what am I saying to a player who comes to every practice? I'm not punishing the player for not making practice. I'm rewarding my players for making practice. Does that make sense to you?
It's perfect sense.
I think at the early ages, if it's implemented in – then it's fantastic. The problem is, in our society here in North Texas, we don't have a lot of loyalty. We have coaches and players that will leave sometimes annually to go find something that's greener. And some realize that wasn't so green over there. And I think that's where the parent education at the early ages is important. What are some of your goals? Okay. How many players, okay, in our I think there's 300,000 players that play in North Texas every Saturday morning, some figure like that, probably more. How many of those players are going to play pro ball? The number is shocking. You know what I'm saying? And why are we producing all these competitive, you got to win, you got to win, to produce such a low percentage when the masses require us to be more, I guess civil is the right word for that. Look at the amount of kids, boys and girls, from U14 on up. The participation numbers decreased drastically. It's embarrassing. Okay, high school, they get a job. They lose interest for whatever reason. They had a bad experience with the U13, U12, U11 coach or club that had to win at all costs. Mom and dad are pushing too much. Kids finally say, hey, I'm done. So they get a boyfriend. They get a girlfriend. I get all the variables. They become some do multiple sports, and they want to specify in one sport. I get that as well, too. But our numbers that diminish from U14 down is embarrassing. And that concerns me more than anything else. And I think it's because we do a poor job, and the kids are younger, to not only educate the parents, also the players as well, too. I'd like to know how many parents stay with one club at 6 years old to 19 years old. Or at 11 years old to 19 years old. It's amazing. And there's various reasons for that. We as a coaching culture, when you leave eighth grade and you go to ninth grade, you get a new teacher. You may love your eighth grade teacher, but your ninth grade teacher is qualified to coach or to teach ninth grade. So in our club, we usually have a 3 to 4 year rule where you stay with a coach for that amount of time. And then typically you graduate to a coach of a higher level, maybe a higher license or more experience, or just a chain so you keep that spice, keep that variety. Don't want to. Can you imagine if your daughter was with the same teacher from second grade up through senior in high school? It's unheard of. And let's talk about licenses, for example, as well, too. We in our country have license programs, which I'm a big fan of. Are there licensing programs to coach basketball or football or track and field? Are there Jurgen Klopp, he has a license to coach soccer. Okay, UEFA badge, all those things as well, too. I'm trying to figure out what do football, American football coaches do to get themselves licensed? They get experience through coaching on the job and stuff like that. But yeah, are there licensing set up for NCAA college coaches?
I don't think there is.
What license do you have? I don't think there are. Do you know of any?
No.
John Calipari, Kentucky. What license do you have? So we're the only sport that does that. Okay, I think it's good. And I think every coach should better themselves. I think it's good for the terminology. And it's important that the people who teach these courses are the ones that we have to be really focused on. Because if we're not teaching the right things properly, then we're just regurgitating the same old stuff. And so this whole thing about teaching to win, I disagree with that right off the bat. I don't think you teach to win. You can teach to be successful. Winning to me is a byproduct.
I think it's changing terminology. I interviewed David Bartlett, Soccer Dave, and he corrected me. He gave me a hard time because I said fix and correct it. He goes, you need to stop using that language. He goes, it's the wrong language to use. He goes, do you want to be fixed and corrected as an adult? No. He goes, then why are we telling our kids they have to be correct, fixed and corrected? He goes, and this is where.
Good point.
And I took it as like, where do we need to find improvement? Because improvement means that there's a measurement to have then when there's improvement, where being fixed and corrected, there is no improvement. It is also in that same interview I did with him, I really learned on not using the word 100%. I want to go out there and give me 110%. Yeah. It's not a realistic thing. Go teach me, go show me you can go play for 90 minutes in a 60-minute match. Go show me that you have enough energy to go play for 120 minutes in a 90-minute match. That is something they can actually physically go work on, where telling me or telling them they have to go figure out how to go play at a higher percentage when it's physically and mathematically impossible to do.
I was guilty of telling some of my boys, stop playing like girls. What are you talking about? Are you kidding me? I'm a girl dad. Okay? Don't play like a girl. Don't play like a boy. Play like a player. Okay? Because you have to grow. You have to mature. You have to evolve. And I think soccer is the same way. Look at the game has changed. When I played, we had a lot of just goal kicks. Boom, you played it forward. Okay? Well, you look at Liverpool play against Chelsea. Okay? And you've got almost every team plays out of the back. And they challenge them. Come on, break our press. But the game has changed so much. And you have to, as a coach and a club, you have to also change and evolve as well, too. Otherwise, you're left behind. It goes back to education and being consistent. And I'm big about discipline. I had a problem last night with we have some parents that – I'm also a father, first and foremost. We have some parents that you have to let your child be coached, okay? Most clubs, mine included, we have parameters where parents have to stay behind the fence so the kids can go to the practice area. And – I had one mom said, I can't see my daughter practice. Boy, she's right over there. If I want to close, I want to go, yeah, but she's right there. You can see her from here. And I said to her, I go, let me ask you a question. How's your daughter? She's 11 years old. I said, okay, do you go to her math teacher and sit in the back of the classroom and watch her teaching your daughter math? No. Okay, your result is when you get the report card. I said, we the same thing. Let your coach and then your reviews at the game when you can watch your daughter play and enjoy yourself. I go, just you have to understand there are parameters involved. And we as parents have got to understand and just let the coaches coach. Okay. If there's a problem, hey, you'll know about it. Your daughter's gonna come home and tell you, Coach Tommy said a bad word today. Oh yeah, okay. Let's call Coach Ed. He'll get that fixed right away. It's important to have accountability within the organization as well too, because we do have some coaches that need to have their hands slapped. We do have some coaches that talk demeaning to the kids. We have to fix some of that stuff as well, too. And those usually happen. Those don't happen when you have a 6-0 game. That happens when you've got a 1-1 game. It means promotion, relegation. It means you maybe get qualified for Dallas Cup. And whatever the case may be, there's a referee involved, and sanctions are high. And that's when you really have to be disciplined. And if a coach can't control herself, how can we ask our kids to control themselves? So right. I saw a game a couple of weeks ago. I think the boy was 9 years old and just lit up the referee and got a red card at 9 years old. And I'm like, how can this happen? And the coach is over there giving the referee a hard time as well, too. And I'm like, dude, look at your 9-year-old player that just got a red card to an adult. And then you have the whole parent sidelines a gauntlet full of referee abuse. And that just that stuff has to stop. I wish you would zero tolerance, in my opinion, referee abuse. That's a whole different subject. I'm getting off tangent or getting off task right now. So I apologize.
But that goes back to something with your club philosophy, especially at the younger age with education. Do you guys enforce silent sidelines? Do you enforce things along that line? When we coached, we actually did a championship game silent sideline, and I would have to go over and tap a parent on the shoulder if they're being too loud, sideline coaching, trying just to have the players play. And it's funny, like thinking back, looking back at what we were doing at the time, trying to convince parents. I'm guilty of this, as I won't yell at my player, and I won't yell at the players on the field or any of the other players. I will yell at a ref. When even when one of us on our one of our players get level another kid, it's where's the safety, ref? It's I call this past weekend I had to go for a walk because I about blew a gasket because two players, my son got punched in the face. And for me as a parent, that's a safety concern when it happens. First it was an elbow, then it's a punch, and then next play, an elbow in the back while he's in midair. The ref's not calling anything. Yeah. That's where I lose it. I don't. And he called it, made a horrible call right in front of us against the other team. And I put my hands up like this to the ref. Like, what's the call?
I know. And it happens.
It happens. You know, and it's, we gotta but safety.
And those who know me know I'm difficult in referees. I expect perfection from myself, from my players, and from the referee. And when I don't get it, then I'm going to say something. But I think it's how you say it is important as well, too. You got to be respectful as well. And these guys got to understand as well, too, that, you know what, referees don't get paid if Team A wins or Team A loses. They have
no
nothing in the game. But we have to also understand as well, too, that we have to, you know, that referee, that may be his fifth game of that day in 95-degree weather. He probably hasn't had a break. Maybe he's got a little Gatorade, a glass, and a power protein bar between games on occasion. And there's a lot of variables that we don't know about. And he should, in his defense as well too, he also should know the ramifications of this game are huge. I get it, your fifth game, but this game may mean we go to the final of the tournament. When grandma's coming in town watching Susie play for the first time in 6 months, and it's a lot of stuff. A lot of outside factors that nobody is aware of. All the more reason we have to maintain discipline. And it starts, and to me, it starts with the coaches. I actually covered a game last year for one of my coaches. And at halftime, I brought the girls together and we're talking. And I told those little girls, her name was Sarah, I want you to go play the left wing. Oh, no, I can't play left wing. I said, excuse me. Dude, that's the sideline where the parents are. And I said, what's that mean? Oh, coach, yeah, they're mean. They're talking to me and they're coaching. I'm like, what? And all the girls going, oh, yeah, don't put us in that sideline, coach. Yes, I'll be right back. So I walked across the field. I took my coaching book. I got my club parents together. And I said, listen, I've got little girls that don't want to play on your sideline because you're coaching. Now, my defense and coach's defense, we sometimes can't hear their parent conversations. We really right. can't. It's windy or the case may be. And I said, listen, first of all, here's what you can and cannot say. And I showed them my coaching book. Here's our level of pressure. We're going to play level two. You can tell them things like get organized, communicate, good job, okay, work hard, but no coaching. And absolutely no yelling at your player, especially no yelling at other parents' players. That's how people get abusive when you start coaching somebody else's kid and you're an insurance salesman. And this is where we, again, as a coach, nothing against insurance salesmen, by the way, but we as coaches have to understand that we have to educate. We're responsible for not our players, but for also our parents as well, too. And referees have I think it's an ask, tell, remove policy. If a parent gets abusive, he comes and asks the coach to sort him out. If it continues, he comes and tells the coach to sort it out. If it continues, the coach is removed. The coach is removed because that parent can't control himself. And we've all had those parents that we've had. Hey, guys, come on. Seriously, go home. Okay. If your child wins or loses this game, is it really that much of a ramification? Okay. Is it going to absolutely destroy the rest of your year? Is it going to, okay, seriously, let's just take things into perspective here. And so I find myself as a director, I'm putting out more fires than I am building up bridges, because we're like engineers. We solve problems. And that's why in my club, in Spurs, we actually have parent contracts, financial contracts and parent contracts, parent guidelines that tell them explicitly how to act. And one of my last sentences that I have in the guideline is say a parent's responsibility ultimately is to bring a lawn chair, sit down, watch your child play, and enjoy the afternoon. That's it. Doesn't talk about yelling at the referees. Doesn't talk about anything else, but just support your child. And in this case, the program as well, too, because if you've got 16, 17, 18 families that are all getting along, you've got a good coach, you've got a good training facility, it's affordable, you travel a couple times a year and you have some fun. And as you get older, you're exposed to college coaches, maybe get some college opportunities and exposure. Those are all great experiences. And it's the stories in between that we want to try to eliminate. The referee abuse, the parent yanking their child from the field because they're happy with their playing time, or the coach and their parent getting into it in front of the kids. We want to eliminate, reduce. We want to eliminate that altogether. Yeah, that's embarrassing. On YouTube, it's crazy, some of these parent fights. Come on. How can you possibly get into a fight with another parent at a child's soccer game? It's just insane. You see in hockey, you see in basketball. It's crazy. And it's getting worse. And you've got some situations where some parents brought guns to the game and stuff like that. And we're losing.
Yes.
We're losing respect, and we're losing. Listen, why are we doing this? Come on now. It goes back to my original statement. What's the percentage of these kids that are going to actually step on a professional soccer field? It's and yet we're doing all these funneling talent to the top and all these things and teaching to win and stuff like that. For what? For the lowest percentage of the entire population that's playing soccer. That's wrong.
Yeah, I think it's 0.1 or 1%, or it's an astronomically low number. And that's a whole conversation.
Yeah, I love it. It was a great time. If you ask any coach right now, he would do whatever he can to play soccer. That's the best thing ever. And so we as coaches, we play through our kids. I'm on a sideline, trying to hit the ball on the goal sometimes, stuff like that. But you got to keep in perspective. You just have to keep in perspective. It's hard.
That's key. So as we move through this progression, so U12 to U15, let's say, because once we hit 16, it's a whole other story. What do you guys do then at that age group? Because now you're getting into Classic League and things along that line, different leagues. You have, if you're not part of ECNL, but there's all these other different leagues. There's
lots of
the Frontier League and a few other leagues in the area that you can join.
So
that's not the lower leagues.
Let's talk about that real quick, if you don't mind, because that's an issue with me as well. We have the privilege of living in North Texas, okay? Arguably, North Texas and Southern California are the two hottest youth soccer hotbeds in the country. We develop teams, players, coaches. It's phenomenal. We have facilities. We have the Girls Classic League at Richland at UTD, and the Boys Classic League are at Richland College and MoneyGram and Plano plays at Russell Creek and Cheyenne Park, and we got Zplex and Melissa. We have quality facilities. We really do. And my friends around the country that come in town for the Dallas Cup or tournaments, so envious, because we really have great facilities here. But we have so many platforms right now as well, too, that teams and coach and players are being torn. And is this the best for my exposure here? Is this the best for my exposure here? Is this the best talent here? And it's confusing. It's confusing for me as a director. And it goes down to our organization as well, too. And so from U12 to U13, U14, the only change is you get a little more serious with your training, a little more focus on your tactical. You still do lots of technical as well, too. But now you're playing in the 11v11 world, okay? And you're playing at these facilities, and you're playing in these leagues, and it's all about where does my team fit the best, okay? Do I want to play in a league or be winning 7-0, 8-0? No, nobody wants that. Hopefully nobody wants that. And counteract to that, do I want to play in a league or be beating 8-0, 9-0, 10-0 every game? No, you don't want that either, okay? So it needs to be challenging, okay? You want to have your kids challenged, not overwhelmed, but also not killing everybody as well, too. So we have a lot of our teams that play in two different leagues. So we'll have maybe some teams will play in Plano and some teams play in the RPL or the NPL, or we have a Classic League team. And in addition to that, we have an NPL team. But that adds an additional game on weekends and during the week as well, too. So now we're getting to that saturation point where, am I overdoing it for these kids? Am I training too much? Are there too many games? They're missing games because they have track? Hold on a second. You're paying for select soccer. How much are you paying for track? Oh, nothing. Yep. Hold on a second. I selected you for select soccer, and you wanted to play in two leagues, and we had a conversation. You want more for your son. You want this and the other, but we have a game tonight. Yeah, but he has to track me. Yeah, but hold on a second. I only have 16 players. You know what I'm saying? And this is what we have. This is my internal debate of how much do I allow these additional leagues? How much do we train these kids? Are we going 3 days a week now? Some of these clubs are training 4 days a week and not allowing kids to play basketball or track. So now are we denying a gifted athlete who can maintain the grades, who has the parent support and the ability to make all these things? Are we eliminating that athlete from running track or playing basketball because he practices 4 days a week with this organization and this platform that doesn't allow second sports? So it becomes really messed up. I particularly, personally, allow and encourage second sports. I think it's great. I think a kid should not be punished for being gifted and talented as long as their grades. I also, one of the clubs that we look at report cards. We look at progress reports. We want to make sure that the kids are getting good grades. And I think parents should welcome that from us. And so if you're having a track meet, okay, you can miss practice tonight. You can't miss a game. And I think what you need to do is communicate with your track coach. Hey, by the way, I'm a select soccer player. I want to run track, but this is my first priority. If it's not, then you shouldn't be on this team in this club that is a high priority. You should be on this team, but we're a little more flexible with missing games. Does that make sense to you?
I think that's the conversation needs to have. I think being a parent that my son's primary sport is soccer, he does run track in the summer because it's something he enjoyed doing last summer and enjoys running. You have to have that conversation. What is the priority? And my son, I use my son as the example because I can't use it as someone else's kid, but kids that do other theater or art programs, and some things are required by the school, even like my son's school performance. It was not something like we signed up for. It was the grade. The whole grade did it. And there was a team that had a game that their son was in the same grade as my son, and he had to miss his game because he couldn't miss Friday's performance, even though they've done it twice that week already. On Friday, they still needed him there. And I found it interesting that I get both sides of the argument. I get the school side of the argument, and I get the parent side of the argument. I know, it's fascinating how, like, his coach is okay. Like, we know the coach very well that this kid plays for, and at the end of the day, they didn't do well. They were missing several players because they were at the school performance. But at the end of the day, like you said, this game matter in 15 years from now.
So I'm dealing with an issue right now with spring break. Okay, this is going to air later on, obviously, but it's a current situation right now. We tell parents in the beginning, we put it in black and white in our contract. We cannot control the leagues and scheduling. Okay. So if you want to schedule them for fall break or spring break, okay, if you can wait, if you can't wait, schedule something that's flexible. I'll give you me as an example. I always scheduled a ski trip. Okay. But I did one that was drivable. Okay. Because if they schedule a game, okay, and my son was a pretty big proponent or big player in that team and stuff like that, and he had to miss a game, and I missed a game as a coach, that's like a well parent group on this team that is really gung-ho about being successful. And so I had one of my teams this past weekend had to play a game with 9 players. There are 18 players on the roster. And the league scheduled them a game on Sunday before spring break, the Wednesday of spring break, and the Saturday after spring break. The Wednesday game got rained out, thankfully, okay? Because I don't forfeit games. That's just another thing. I don't do that. So we had to play a game with 9 players on the Sunday before spring break. And I said, why? The parents were on spring break. I said, yeah, but you had a game. It's on the calendar. They left. And then, to make matters worse, the Saturday game, when some players came back, we had a rain delay. It was ridiculous. It was a long rain delay. Some parents took their child and left because it was too long to wait in the rain delay. And I'm like, I'm pulling my hair out when my coach is telling me this. And so now what I have to do is get in front of my parents again next signing and be very explicit. And I'm going to have them sign a document. I understand the spring break and the fall break and the holiday break guidelines. If my team is in an event, I understand that my expectation is to be there to support the team. And if it's not, this is where we have to be communicated as well too. If I got a team of 18 players, okay, and I've got 10 that are in the same neighborhood, the same school district, and they're going to go on a band trip during spring break or this weekend, I'm not going to schedule a tournament that weekend. Or if I've got 10 kids playing football and they play football games on Tuesday nights, I'm not going to practice Tuesday nights. Let's move practice to Monday nights. But it all goes to communication. And that's where we as a coaching staff and an organization have to communicate, and the parents have to also communicate to us as well too. It gets worse in high school. We'll talk about that when we get to the high school ages.
And that's the thing. I think parents, as much as the coach has to communicate, the parents have to communicate back. I think we've had coaches where there's barely any communication and you have to fight to get an answer. And then you have coaches that over communicate and it's like another email already. And then you think back to the days. Yeah. And you think back to the days when you had no communication, and I'd rather have the over communication and knowing what's exactly going on and filling us in, even if it's stuff that might not fully pertain to our player or whatever player it may be. I'd rather have more communication than none. And as much as it might drive me a little crazy at times, I would still take that over no communication because it's something better than nothing.
This is something that's close to my heart because cell phones run this country now, run the whole world for that matter.
Yes.
And I feel so bad for parents who are just getting into the cell phone age because it's difficult. I was lucky. My kids were older and they got it when they were in high school, that deal that they were young and stuff like that. But once a player gets a cell phone, usually 11, 12 years old, okay, we have the player communicate with the coach. And even if the player doesn't have a cell phone, we ask that he communicate to the coach with the parent's cell phone. Obviously, texting is the way everybody does things these days. But if you can't make a practice, we need you as the player to communicate with me. Okay, what? I can't make. Why is that? Oh, I got in trouble school today. Oh, okay. Now there's an extra layer of accountability, which now disappoints the coach as well as the parent. But if you can't make a practice, we have to know as a coach. So we put our practice sessions up. Let's suppose I'm working on finishing in this one evening session. I've got 3 of my forwards are missing practice and my goalkeeper is missing practice. There goes my finishing session. You know what I'm saying? So we have to know the condition of our plane if we go for a flight. So it's important that we have to know what's going on. Not to mention, if you can't make a practice, I got to know why. Because if you can't make it up, you can't start on Saturday. I'm going to go to coach's practice tomorrow night. Okay. Ask him his permission. Make sure he checked the website. Make sure his schedule is updated. Because we allow that in our club. We allow kids to attend multiple sessions. That way, if they miss because of track or their sister at baptism, they can make it up and still be able to start the game on Saturday. So the communication is huge for me. And if I don't hear from you, I'm going to let you know. Oh, you missed practice last night. How come? Oh, I forgot. Oh, you forgot. Okay, now we go into the punishment phase. Accountability and then the punishment phase. Okay, you can do a couple hundred push-ups. we'll make sure it's going to sting a little bit. So next time you won't forget to text me.
I like it. So as you move up in this progression of age, so we're in this middle age group now, I'm assuming everything that you're teaching from the 6 to 11 is just the foundation, and then you build upon that. I'm just ballparking it basing on past experience.
You're building a house. And so at the younger ages, you want the solid concrete, beer and peen, whatever you want to do. Make sure it's nice and set. And you start building up some walls and you add some rooms and stuff like that. When they get to the high school ages, now we can add the game room and the media room and the detached garage and everything else as well, too. If you're lucky, maybe a pool as well. It's all about the whole building the house mythology, if you will. But at the same time, you've got to keep the enjoyment in. You know, my high school players who start driving now as well, too. But we got to, is practice going to be entertaining? High speed, high energy. Okay, guys, good practice today. It's over already? That's a good point. That's what I want to hear back from my players. Or can we stay 5 more minutes? Or next goal wins. So you want to make that enjoyment, it has to go all through. Even my UPSL men who are college and beyond, they look forward to coming to practice. It's got to be enjoyable. If you come to practice and you're just getting beat down all the time, you're going to stop coming to practices. So you want to start with the younger the ages, the more touches. The technical doesn't stop. Even at the older age, my U19 boys, last night we did technical for a good half an hour. The technical has got to be that you can never get enough touches. Tiger Woods used to spend 6 hours at the driving range just hitting balls. You cannot get enough what I call repetitive touches. That's why our 5 skills are important. Excuse me. And we assign homework at home too. So we have some kids that in the world of video, we have coaches that assign YouTube skill sessions. I want you to do this at home tonight. Okay. And then I want you to put it on your phone and send me a video of you doing this. We started doing that during the COVID days, which is great. Kids sending videos of themselves working out is brilliant. It's like a homework assignment you can actually confirm. And they get creative with it as well, too, which I love that part.
And that's because at this age, I feel like, I don't know how, when you get to U11, you start having, I know you have the yearly objectives for the younger groups, but it is pretty static, I would say, from my experience with coaching. Like you have to work on very technical stuff at that young age. The more technical they are, the better chances are for them to be successful in those fun games they play.
And that's where a coach has to be creative. If I do the same drill every week, the kids don't do this again. You've got to be creative, and that's where the coaching education comes into play. Because the coaching education, the best thing about it for me was networking. And when you network with different coaches, we share ideas. Let's be honest. Every drill I have, I either stole from somebody or I saw someone do it and I adjusted it once in a while, or I invented something on my own that somebody else is already doing anyhow. It's not rocket science. It's how we adjust the parameters and do we get neutral players and what's the ultimate goal in the drill and stuff like that. So we as coaches, we share lots of information. You know, I'll see my coach do a drill. Oh, I've done that drill in years. And I'll do that drill again as well too. So you want to keep it spicy. If you eat the same food every Friday, you're not going to eat on Fridays. So you want to make sure it's spicy. And that's where the coaches, that's why we have that 3 or 4 year rule as well too, because a different coach has different drills that he or she really is good at. And this coach is really, I'm really good at zone defending. Okay, I can tell you how the back four should work and how the pass lane should be cut down and stuff like that. My coach is, my son is a great coach at finishing. Hey, working these guys at finishing today and stuff like that. So we as a coach, if a youth football team had a call from Troy Aikman to come in and do a session, man, they would put the red carpet out and have him come in no problem right off the bat. If a typical youth soccer coach had a professional come and be available, a lot of them would be hesitant because they're afraid he may teach their kids something they haven't been taught yet. And that's completely wrong. We need to welcome new ideas. I want my friends, they come in town, you know, my old teammates or old colleagues, hey, I'm in town. Hey, how about doing a session for my boys? I want them to hear different voices. And sometimes it's the exact same drill with the exact same terminology, but somebody else said it. So it sinks in a little bit more.
So
we as a coaching collective organization need to welcome new ideas.
So with that being said, do you guys have a lot of guest coaches coming in, or do you guys have a coach from the club come over and help every now and then just to put another ear into the conversation?
One of the things we do with our Friday skill sessions is we have one of my coaches has got a PhD in the sports sciences and the speed and agility, which is enormous. So he teaches the kids the running technique and ways to get speed. One of my coaches is really good at finishing and stuff like that. Then we bring in a third skills coach. It could be a coach from the UPSL. It could be a coach from the Dallas Sidekicks. It could be a coach outside. He comes in, he does different skills, get a little spice in there as well too. So we want to make sure it's all creative and different. And that way the kids get to be seen by different coaches. Having a kid go to different coaches sessions is great for them because then they can hear a different voice once in a while. So maybe that coach will tell you, use your left foot. No, use your right foot more. So you want to give the kids more ideas about doing things. Try this move here. Oh, here's a good move for you to try. Or if you play the ball here and move in this zone here, you get a better idea for attack. So it's important that we give more voices for everybody. So an open mind, be secure in your coaching position and bring more coaches in. If my buddy Steve can't make a practice session, like tomorrow night, he's got a game. So I'll run his practice session. That way we don't cancel practice. It keeps the same schedule for the parents and the kids. I'll run his practice session and make a different voice right away in the practice session. So we do a lot of coaching within our organization as well too, which is enormous. And coaches, when they have a free game, they go and watch other coaches. So our coaching organization in the Spurs is a family as well too, which I absolutely love. And all my coaches have played for me, currently play for me, or I've known for decades. So we're our own little unique family.
I think that tends to work better having, because if heaven forbid, game gets rescheduled and a coach can't make it or a family emergency and it. A coach can step in a heartbeat and not skip a beat knowing the kids are ready, the players.
And knowing the kids' names.
It's yes.
Saying, hey, what's his name? Well, you're going to coach me today? You don't know my name? So that we small things, it's important. And that's why when a coaching staff works together, enormous.
I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. Coach Ed shared a lot of information. There's a lot of information coming with next week's episode. That being said, I think there's a lot to re-listen to in this episode. I've listened to this now about 5 times. And listening to what he has to say and what he's trying to share in this first episode is so important. So,
hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.